Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
My next guest became a global literary phenomenon 2 decades ago when her book, The Bookseller of Kabul, sold millions of copies around the world. Following the US withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, she was one of a very small number of journalists given permission to return to the country. She's now written a book that provides a glimpse into life in Afghanistan since the Taliban took back control. The book is called The Afghans, and its author, Osne Seierstad, joins me on the line now from London. Osne, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's lovely to talk to you and lovely to have you with us. Can we go back, before we talk about this book, to that moment when you went into Afghanistan 2 weeks after 9/11? Perhaps you might just describe that time. You were embedded with the Northern Alliance of Forces, weren't you?
Yes, well, I just came there on my own across the border on a little fleet from Tajikistan to Afghanistan. I'd never been in that part of the world ever. So came at night, and the next morning I realized I was at a military base, because that's where we were brought from, that fleet, and that was the base of the Northern Alliance. So starting reporting on the military advances of the Northern Alliance against the Taliban, but also seeing those ghost-like figures who never walked in the middle of the road, just by the, you know, by the side, by the houses, by the gates. And that were those, you know, blue-clad women in their burqas that I'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. And so lots of curiosity was raised already at that time.
And then going back 20 years later in 2022, I mentioned that you were one of a very small number of journalists who managed to get back in. Can you tell us a little bit about how you did that?
Well, first, you need to get a visa. It's in. The Taliban is quite bureaucratic in their brutality too. So I got a visa in Oslo, got on a plane, and then I had to go to get approval at the foreign ministry in Kabul. And there they asked me what I was going to do. And I said I wanted to write a book about the Taliban, and not as a movement, but as individual people, because the movement we know, but who are they? What motivates them? What do they want? That were my questions. And then my first response there at the ministry was that, you know, we in the Taliban, we don't talk. You can just forget about that idea. Mm. We don't, you know, share our secret or tell about our private lives.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because people might remember in 2022, we were told that the Taliban was different now. Like, there was a big public relations exercise. We are not the Taliban of 20 years ago. But it seems that you quickly discovered that that wasn't quite the case.
Absolutely, it was. But that first year, we were uncertain. Have they reformed? Are they better? Are they more moderate? And there are certain things that are slightly different. For instance, it's still very repressive when it comes to women. Last Taliban in the 90s, there were no schooling for girls. Now they let the girls go to school until 12, but then it's over. And they also let them have in their cellars, basements, those private schools that some women teachers who've lost their jobs have for the neighborhood kids. Before, they would have been beaten up for that. Now Taliban, you know, applies to those kind of things. But it's a safe movement. It's just that they're more like, you know, they have their iPhones and they write, you know, answer by email. So technology wise, they have reformed with the world, but the ideology stays the same, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you were asked when you went to Afghanistan, is this a follow-up to The Bookseller of Kabul? And you're very clear in interviews that you have done that it really is not, but there is a thread running from one book to the other. Do you want to explain that to us?
Well, the thread is to try to find out what is a life for an Afghan person. And in The Bookseller of Kabul, I chose to focus on one family, but different generations in one family, men and women, boys and girls in one family. In this book, I've chosen a more diverse set of characters. So it's three main characters, different ages, coming from different areas of the country and coming with totally different views on the world. And one of them is the Taliban commander that I finally found, who's grown up in war, in the Soviet war, and war is often inherited from father to son. So he becomes a fighter with the Haqqani group, which was the most lethal group within the Taliban. And he sees the Western presence in Afghanistan as an invasion, as an occupation, and he's among those very difficult enemies to have, an enemy that is not afraid to die. Mm-hmm.
This is the man you call Bashir, and I found him really intriguing. One of the words that kept going through my head when I was reading his story was indulged. I felt he was indulged by his family, and now he's living quite a privileged life, isn't he, as someone who's in the upper echelons of the Taliban?
Oh, absolutely. This is the new elite. And Bashir is actually his name. So he's open. His identity is open. So he's like, he has gotten this approval to talk, or took the approval. That's a bit, I don't know. But so he lives, he took over a huge villa from one of the Afghan MPs who fled the country when the Taliban arrived. And there he has his three wives, all his children. He takes care of the wives of his dead brothers, because most Talibans have lost lots of relatives. It's a house packed of life and destinies. And one thing was to follow him around now in, that first victorious year, where he went around to thank his troops and soldiers, and also to kind of, keep the support, because who knows what will happen. But I also was spending time with the women who never leave the house. They're just there, sitting on the floor and talking. And they were really happy to have a visitor, because now they told me life was so boring. It's been much more exciting during the war, where they were on the run, where they were making bombs. Like, they were making those very lethal roadside bombs that are very easy and cheap to make, and often the women are making them. They can, one little item can explode whole tanks, and it's for the price of a family meal. So they were really taking active role in the war, and now they felt that life was without the rewards that they got in jihad, the rewards for the afterlife.
Well, because it's a desperately sad storyline throughout, that the female children and then the women don't go anywhere, don't do anything, can't have access to an education. Their sole purpose is to be married off, but they can't be seen before that happens. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that's hard to grasp, I think. I tried to ask them, would they want anything else? Would they want to have a more active role in the society forming? And they were all just no, we're so happy now. And this is, we're in charge of household, men are in charge of the rest. So it was really hard to find any revolutionary thought in that movement. Mm-hmm. But I also follow other characters like Jamil, who is a true revolutionary, who used to be a minister in the former government, and is an education participation activist, like participation for women, for disabled, for different groups, for all ethnic groups in society. And it was interesting to also see her struggle and how she broke out from a very conservative family that also didn't let girls go to school, and what saved her was that she got really ill. So on the first page of the book, she's almost dying from a fever. She's a baby.
Yeah.
And it's a polio. And that polio makes her foot is limp, which makes her not any longer a commodity that can be sold, in marriage or traded in marriage as her sisters. And for that reason, and the fact that she didn't have any value on that market, they let her go to school, and she excelled in school and then ended up as a minister. But also, she's one of those who had to flee the Taliban. So she fled to Norway, and that was where I met her first.
She was very clever in convincing her father year to year to allow her to go to school.
Yeah, but just she has this inner drive that is amazing. And I think that is also important to show these diverse lives of Afghan women, because, yes, the Taliban wives are passive now because they are grown into a role where you're supposed to be passive. Jamila broke out of it. And then it's the third character in the book, which is Ariana, she's just turned 20 when the Taliban came. She had this dream of becoming a judge, a female judge. And that is, at the time, last 20 years, when the Western presence was there, we also told all those young girls, you can be anything, you know, as if you just do well in school, you can, you know, you can become a president, just like we tell girls here. And then in the end, that was not true. Mm-hmm. So she is one of those desperate girls that had hoped for something else and had grown up on Netflix, on, you know, Spotify, listening to Beyonce or Justin Bieber, and just having a mindset just like, you know, many of other our young girls here in the West. So her story is also so it's so heartbreaking, harrowing. What happened to these young girls?
Well, her story shows us how women's freedoms have been curtailed one by one. You know, her attempts to go back to the university campus and only to be ordered home. That's just one example of how her ambition has been stamped on.
Yes, absolutely. And now the sad truth is that the Taliban are in full control. There is no resistance against what is happening because, I mean, the West have left and we lost, and they're in total control and they do whatever they like. So they have closed all access to of universities to women, except from a few subjects like nursing, a few healthcare positions mainly. But I think there's a lot we could do, like, you know, like with the resources we have, help them do, you know, remote teaching, help giving young girls maybe scholarships to study, whether in the West, or sponsor them in Muslim countries, because they may not be allowed by their parents to come to the West, but like in Indonesia or in Pakistan. So I think that we should, I mean, having invested so much in Afghanistan and just let them on their own, I don't think that's fair. So I think there's lots of things we can do for these women without going to war with the Taliban.
I'm just interested to know what you think about the Taliban's openness with you, you know, saying to Bashir, yes, you can talk for this book, you can be very open, you can show Osnay around. I mean, does that show that they're very confident in their power?
I think so, absolutely. And I think it's for them, it's time of celebrating, and that's actually still going on, celebrating the victory. Also because what they say, we suffered for 20 years for this. You know, we lost brothers and fathers and sons and limbs, and, you know, this is our time. And God gave us this, and he gave us the victory. So they're very certain of themselves. And the fact that Bashir wanted to be in my book is also a status thing. I realized, like, he suddenly has a biography, or kind of a bit biography. And also I think that he was eager to tell his story. Mm-hmm. Because they've been living in, you know, in the mountains and in the woods for those two decades. And he was also on death row in Afghanistan. Like, he was convicted by the former government to death by hanging for his crimes of, you know, suicide bombings, kidnappings, killings, big attacks on hospitals and police stations. So he was a real bad guy. But he got out through the Doha deal that was signed between Trump and the Taliban in 2020, and the condition was that 5,000 Taliban terrorists got released from Afghan prisons, and he was one of them. Okay. So he is, he was let loose then by this peace deal that really gave Taliban the victory somehow. His other side is like, he's a very sweet family man. You know, that's in my reporting, I don't judge. I let that let the reader judge. So to see those sides of being a very shrewd fighter, but then also a loving father that, you know, his three wives are fighting over for his attention, and being quite open with me. Like, when he took me around, he told everyone, like, whatever you tell me, you tell her too. So he was like a true open liberal in that sense.
to me as a journalist.
Osna, it's a fascinating read, and while it's informative and of course it's factual, it actually reads like a novel in places, and you're flicking the pages because you want to find out what happens next to these three intriguing characters. Thank you very much for talking to us about it. The book is called The Afghans by Osna Seierstad, and it is available now. Back after this break.